Hello and welcome to Press TV's debate. I'm Marzia Hashemi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, what happens when the bank goes broke? Saudi Arabia has announced public spending cuts and rises in tax, fuel and energy prices in 2016 after its 2015 budget deficit soared to a record $98 billion. The International Monetary Fund has warned that the Saudi government's current policies could mean that it runs short of financing to support spending within 5 years. According to some estimates, the oil-rich country has gone from a budget surplus of 12% of GDP in 2012 to a projected deficit of about 22%. Will Saudi Arabia run out of cash much faster than previously anticipated if it doesn't reverse its political strategy, including wars in Yemen and Syria, and its economic policies, especially its crude oil oversupply?
Saudi Arabia's budget deficit in 2015 has soared to a record $98 billion amid falling oil prices. The kingdom has decided to cut subsidies for diesel, electricity and fuel to partially make up for the revenue loss. Petrol prices in the kingdom have risen by 40%, while the price of some oil byproducts has risen by over 50% starting Tuesday. Diesel, electricity and water prices will also increase. The planned cuts in spending and energy subsidies indicate that the world's largest crude exporter is bracing for a prolonged period of low oil prices.
Social services will suffer in the country. In addition to the taxes and increased, we will see inflation due to the electricity and energy prices going up by 66%. So we will see an increasing pressure on the population and also on the monarchy itself, because I think people had enough. In 1 year, this king has destroyed a lot of the economy and drove the country to the ground.
The news of the soaring budget deficit was quick to cause jitters in the market in Riyadh. Shares dived over 3% as the market opened for early trade on Tuesday. The losses were led by the key petrochemical sector, which shed over 6%. The banking sector was also down nearly 3%. Many believe that the world's largest oil exporter has become the victim of its own warmongering policies. Over the past years, Saudi has done its utmost to destabilize oil markets by refusing to cut output to stabilize prices. Riyadh had assumed that it would be able to withstand lower oil prices and put U.S. shale oil-producing companies out of business and exert pressure on countries like Iran, Russia, and Syria. But latest figures show that Saudi oil revenues, which make up 77% of the country's total revenue figure for this year, are down 23% compared to last year. Saudi's destructive policies in Bahrain and Yemen and its funding and equipping extremist groups in Syria have also been a major burden on the kingdom's economy in recent years. Reports say Riyadh's military spending exceeded $5 billion in 2015 alone. The prospects for the coming year seem grim, too. Riyadh has released a tight-fisted budget for 2016, with government spending cut to nearly $224 billion.
The money allocated in 2016 to the armed forces and security is 10 times, more than that, 10 times the money allocated to municipal services.
The government forecasts the deficit will narrow to $87 billion next year. But the IMF paints a grimmer forecast for the oil-rich Arab country, saying that its public debt as a percentage of GDP may jump to nearly 45% by 2020, from below 2% in 2014. If weak oil prices persist, Saudi Arabia will face dramatic spending reductions in the coming years, and the country is expected to run out of cash much faster than previously anticipated.
I'd like to welcome my guest to the program, author of Big Oil and Their Bankers in the Persian Gulf, Mr. Dean Henderson out of Memphis, and finance editor from The Independent, Mr. Sean O'Grady out of London. Thank you both for being with us. Well, let's start this off in London with Mr. O'Grady. How critical, in your perspective, is this Saudi budget deficit as we are talking about $98 billion this year?
Well, I think it's very important to keep it in perspective. The Saudi Arabians have got vast reserves of oil under the vast sands that they rule over. And they also have vast reserves of financial assets and other assets around the world as well, financial assets which they can use should they wish to. So that's the first thing. And then the second thing is that nobody does know where oil prices are going to go. Some of the reason for the weakness, as you said in your report, was because of the oversupply that they've indulged in order to undermine and make less competitive the American shale gas industry in particular, and fracking efforts in North America and in Europe, in Britain as well. They have been doing that, that is perfectly true. But it's also the case that the emerging markets, China in particular, those economies have been slowing down, their growth rates have slowed somewhat. Mm-hmm. If they were to pick up again, if economic and trade activity around the world was to pick up a good deal, then it's possible the oil price could leastways stabilise and may even go up. And as soon as you get a lot of geopolitical tension in the Middle East, which is never very far away, oftentimes you'll find that the oil price goes up again. A lot depends, for example, on what happens in Iraq, which is a very important supply of oil to the world economy. So I think that it's got to be kept in some sort of perspective. Saudi Arabia is not about to go bust. Saudi Arabia is not the new Greece. Saudi Arabia isn't going to be begging any countries for money anytime soon, and we shouldn't feel that, how could I put it, sorry for these extremely rich rulers of an extremely wealthy country.
All right, what about that, Mr. Henderson? How critical is this? Because we've seen that the International Monetary Fund has warned the Saudi government that the current policies could mean that it runs short of financing to support spending within 5 years. Your take on all of this?
Well, thanks for having me. There's really two Saudi Arabias. There's the House of Saud, the monarchy, you know, led by this King Salman, who isn't very popular even among the members of the House of Saud. There's been rumors of a palace coup, you know, for the last few months here. And then there's the Saudi people. So the Saudi monarchy, of course, isn't going to get hurt. Mr. O'Grady's right. They have not just oil on the ground, but they have extensive financial assets around the world. They basically own Bahrain, which is home to the U.S. Fifth Fleet, and also the offshore banking center in the Persian Gulf. So what they're going to do, and what they're already doing, is they're imposing austerity. The House of Saud is imposing austerity on its own people by raising, by cutting subsidies on electricity, cutting subsidies on fuel and things like this, and that's exactly what they'll do. They won't themselves be hurt financially at all. They do what they're told. I mean, Saudi Arabia is less a country than a sort of an oil company with a flag, and they do what they're told. They call it the swing producer for the West, but what that really means is they'll do whatever the West tells them to do. So the big oil companies and the banks told them, look, we got one shot here to avoid deflation. We got one card left in the deck, and it's called oil prices. So we got to take these oil prices lower, put some people, money in people's pockets at Christmas time, and hope this thing, doesn't crater into a deflationary depression. Well, that's what they did. So that's what they're doing. And the other thing, of course, is they're punishing the Russians, the Iranians. And the other thing is they're trying to run these shale people out of business. They've already been some mergers that have been announced. Shell bought a big oil company. Exxon is rumored to be in talks with Anadarko Petroleum to buy it. Mm-hmm. And so this is the other thing. You let the oil markets crash, and then you pick up these assets for cheap. So, but Saudi Arabia, the people are going to suffer.
Let's look at that aspect. Sorry to interrupt you, Mr. Henderson. Looking at something you just said, because you said basically the Saudi regime does as it's told, with that being the scenario, and you said that there are two different Saudi Arabias, one as far as the royal family and the other, the majority of people, but with this situation and bringing down the prices in the way that they have done, flooding the markets, It seems that it has backfired on the people, at least themselves. And how likely is that to ricochet and cause some type of movement or perhaps even unrest inside of the country as the people themselves, regular people, are going to be more and more under pressure?
Yeah, I think that's more likely scenario, especially, as I say, this new King Salman is just not popular at all. most Saudi people, they call this House of Saud, they call them Munfaqeen, which means infidels. In other words, they preach all this Wahhabism and this Islamism. They fund ISIS, they fund Al-Qaeda, they fund the Taliban, who have recently had gains again in Afghanistan because the Saudis are funding them against the interests of the United States. And so you have these people doing these things, preaching all this extremist stuff, and at the same time going to, you know, the south of France, going to Monte Carlo to gamble. Recently a prince got caught with cocaine coming in through Kuwait. And these guys are just they're just filthy people. They have no morals, no values, no religion at all. And yet they sit atop the Saudi people with this notion of you have to wear a veil if you're a woman and you go to Starbucks. You can't drive in Saudi Arabia if you're a woman without a man in the car. And you can't vote. And it's just wrong that we even support this kind of a medieval sort of regime.
Okay. Stay with me, both Mr. Henderson and Mr. O'Grady. We're going to cross over to our Facebook page and see what our viewers have said about this subject.
Saudi Arabia is an ISIS ally. It might have spent all the cash on funding ISIS, Daesh. Perhaps all the money has gone for those brand new Toyota cars, equipment and weapons for the terrorists and mercenaries. Definitely al-Baghdadi was not that rich to buy all those weapons and cars with his own money. This exactly is the result of their policies to harm Iran's economy. Now they must face it. Long-term consequences of their actions are coming. Basically, the Saudi regime invests our oil funds and our scholars for terrorism. They invest our main resources for sectarian wars. I'm sure that in the future, the Saudi regime will be begging like beggars.
What do you think about some of our comments, Mr. O'Grady? You've already expressed your perspective that they're not in as much trouble as it appears because of their assets. But I posed a question prior to the Facebook comments to Mr. Henderson and talking about pressure from inside, because we see now that they are taking away subsidies. We're talking about gasoline with a jump of 50%, and now water, electricity, basic necessities that are increasing. How likely do you see the possibility of that pressure coming from within, from the people themselves?
I think it's more complicated than that. I think most of the Saudi people are reasonably well looked after, even by the ruling class. I think a lot of the immigrants, most of the population is probably immigrant of one sort or another. The people towards the bottom of the pile, all the housemaids and the people who work in the shopping malls and that sort of thing, they will be hit a bit harder by it. But I wouldn't exaggerate, again, the cut in living standards that the average Saudi Arabian, middle-class Saudi Arabian, for example, is likely to suffer. I think what is more difficult for them is the whole politics of what's going on now, which is what your email is, and your viewers were talking about. The relationship with Islamic State, for example, or Daesh, is a very difficult one. If it is true that the Saudi Arabian state has actually been funding Daesh, as some people say, it is a very odd thing for them to be doing, because it's such a destabilizing force.
Do you doubt that the Saudis are actually sponsoring or helping Daesh, when we see that the same Takfiri ideology that the Saudis continually promote is the same ideology that the Daesh Takfiris adhere to, and also that many of them have been trained in Saudi Arabia and funded by Saudi Arabia, and of course there are many documents to say so. Do you still doubt that Saudi Arabia has any ties with Daesh?
Well, I will be honest with you. A lot of people say that they do. I don't know myself. I'm not an expert on Saudi Arabia's funding of Daesh or anything like it. The only thing I would say is that common sense would tell you that the Saudi Arabian state is not monolithic, even though it's an absolute monarchy and all the rest of it. And the Saudi Arabian nation is not monolithic, or not as monolithic as it looks. And so it may be that there may be elements in Saudi Arabia who have been funding terrorists of one description or another, maybe Daesh, and many parts of the government, many parts of the state apparatus may not have been in favour of that. They may not have gone out of their way to stop it, but they may not have been able to stop it. So that's the first thing. The second thing is that I think there is a history of Saudi Arabia exporting Wahhabism. It was certainly the case, I think, in Belgium, which we discovered a lot more about after the Paris attacks a few weeks ago here in Europe. The third thing, though, is very odd, which is that if the Saudi Arabian state is actually funding Daesh, Islamic State as it's sometimes called, Islamic State, al-Baghdadi, has called for the fall of the House of Saud. Bin Laden, and is presumably with his allies in Taliban when he was running, partly running Afghanistan, he called for the end of the House of Saud in Saudi Arabia. So if they are putting money into these people and funding their activities and so forth, it's a very strange strategy for the Saudi government.
Okay.
The royal family.
What about that, Mr. Henderson? Because
Mr.
Gray, O'Grady is right. On the one hand, they had called for the Saudis to be attacked. However, neither the Saudis nor the Israelis really have ever suffered from Daesh. But looking at the financial part in all of this, Mr. Henderson, how much of this in funding a lot of these terrorist groups do you think that actually have put some added pressure on the Saudi regime as far as this budget crisis that we're seeing now? Does it play a role at all in all of this?
Excuse me. Well, I'm sure it does. I mean, there's a lot of money tied up, and there's no doubt that the Saudis are back in Daesh, ISIL, whatever you want to call it. Even bin Laden, I mean, back, you know, during Afghanistan, you know, people have the impression that, you know, somehow al-Qaeda just came out of nowhere. Well, during the Afghan crisis back in the late 70s, early 80s, when Reagan was president, not only was Osama bin Laden in Afghanistan building the CIA training facilities at Khost, he was an emissary for the House of Saud in that capacity. Because you have to understand, the Saudis have always been paymaster for the CIA's covert operations. It's a long history. You know, they funded the Contras, Adnan Khashoggi, Prince Bandar, all those guys. Yeah, the private guys kick in too, but the government kicks in too. They funded Savimbi in Namibia. They funded Renamo in Mozambique. They funded the Mujahideen in Afghanistan. They're still funding the Taliban. Again, the Saudis do what they're told. And the Americans and the British and the banking establishment, the intelligence establishment, which is really the same people who meet at the Council of Foreign Relations and write white papers and the Trilateral Commission, the Clash of Civilizations, which Samuel Huntington penned in 73, which is being played out right now in the Middle East to perfection. Everybody hates Muslims now in America. That's great. That's just exactly what they wanted, see? And I don't hate Muslims, obviously, and a lot of people don't, but a lot of people do, and that was the whole point. So what it is, the giant covert operation, they do want to destabilize the Middle East. It is in Saudi interest, in the United States, Britain interest, to destabilize the Middle East. Mainly what they want to do is they want to take off the northern part of Iraq, make it into a Kurdistan, hope Mustafa Barzani, who's been their puppet, the Kurd leader in that region, has been the puppet of the CIA forever. He actually attacked Iran at the behest of Iraq one time, back in the 70s even, and now his son's running the show. So he'll go along, he'll play ball, and they're trying to take that area because it has oil, because the Kirkuk oil field lies there. And ExxonMobil has a contract on that field, but they have not been able to negotiate a percentage with the El Abadi government in Iraq. And this is a major thorn in the side of the big oil companies. So that's why all of a sudden Iraq is allied with Russia. They don't like the United States anymore. They're not playing ball with big oil. They're not going to privatize the entire oil sector in Iraq, which was the plan when we went to invade Iraq. So if they're not going to do that, then yes, we need instability. We need to take off Kurdistan and make it its own country, and that's why Daesh is in there. At the same time, they're smuggling oil. The finance themselves are smuggling drugs with the gray wolves in Turkey, who are allied with Erdogan to his right, because he needs a coalition partner, and that's them. And the gray wolves have always, these fascists have always worked with the CIA and the dark underbelly of Western intelligence, and that's what's really going on in the Middle East.
And on that note, I think that brings us to quite a close. So sorry, we're out of time. I appreciate both our guests being with us, Mr. Dean Henderson, author of Big Oil, and their bankers in the Persian Gulf out of Memphis, and Mr. Sean O'Grady, finance editor of The Independent out of London. Thank you both for being with us. And as always, viewers, we appreciate you being with us for another debate. I'm Marzia Hashemi, signing out for myself and all the crew right here in Tehran. Thanks so much and goodbye.